Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to TCS Q1 FY18 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal for an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kedar Shirali. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Zaid. Good evening and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to discuss TCS's financial results for the first quarter of fiscal year 2018, ending June 30th, 2017. This call is being webcast through our website, and an archive, including the transcript, will be available on the site for the duration of this quarter. The financial statements, quarterly fact sheet, and press releases are also available on our website. Our leadership team is present on this call to discuss our results. We have with us today Mr. Rajesh Gopinathan, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director.
Hi, good evening all.
Mr. N.G. Subramaniam, Chief Operating Officer.
Good evening to all of you.
Mr. V. Ramakrishnan, Chief Financial Officer.
Hello, everyone.
Mr. Ajay Mukherjee, EVP and Head of Global Human Resources.
Hi, everyone.
Rajesh and Ramki will give a brief overview of the company's performance, followed by a Q&A session. As you are aware, we don't provide specific revenue or earnings guidance, and anything said on this call which reflects our outlook for the future or which could be construed as a forward-looking statement must be reviewed in conjunction with the risks that the company faces. We have outlined these risks in the second slide of the quarterly fact sheet available on our website and emailed out to those who have subscribed to our mailing list. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Rajesh.
Thank you, Kedar, and once again, good evening to all of you. It's been a very exciting and busy quarter for me personally, with lots of travel. NGS and I met with over 100 customers across all our major markets, and I'm happy to tell you that they have been uniformly supportive and appreciative of the seamless leadership transition that we have had, and the stability of our management team and our relationships continue as before. Coming to the quarter, we have started off fiscal year 2018 on a very promising note, with robust volume growth of 3.5% Q-on-Q that translated into a constant currency revenue growth of 2% Q-on-Q and 6.3% Y-on-Y. A sharp appreciation of the rupee against US dollar resulted in a revenue tailwind in our USD reported numbers and a bigger headwind in our INR numbers. In USD terms, we added incremental revenue of $139 million, which is a Q-on-Q growth of 3.1% and a year-on-year growth of 5.2%. In rupee terms, revenue growth was flattish at negative 0.2% Q-on-Q and 1% year-on-year. Moving on to margins, wage increases and currency impact resulted in an operating margin of 23.4% and a net margin of 20.1%. Ramki will cover that in more detail. Before I go on to the segment details, let me talk about an important organizational change that we made last quarter. Our service practices were slightly reorganized, and there were two main imperatives that drove this change. Customers are increasingly moving away from buying discrete services and looking to us to execute end-to-end digital transformation, requiring a seamless orchestration of our multiple service teams. Think of it as our full services strategy in its second phase. Secondly, the individual components of the digital service stack, such as analytics, cloud, IoT, and automation, have gained critical mass, and with the right leadership focus, will gain significant scale in the coming years. To address these two imperatives, we have created a new horizontal organization called the Business and Technology Services Group, or BTS, headed by Krishnan Ramanujam, who until recently headed our consulting and enterprise solutions business, whose revenue grew nearly threefold under his watch to $3 billion. Within BTS, we have three groups: the Digital Transformation Services Group, which consists of a host of newly launched service practices addressing different elements in the digital service stack. The second group is called the Cognitive Business Operations, which comprises of our erstwhile IT Services Group and the Business Process Group. Finally, the Consulting and Service Systems Integration Group, which will serve as the orchestration arm bringing together the various service teams to deliver transformational outcomes. Each of these newly created units is headed by seasoned leaders such as P.R. Krishnan, Dina, and Raghu, each with a track record of building up multi-billion dollar businesses from scratch. That underlines our confidence in the future growth potential of these businesses and our commitment to invest significant management bandwidth to drive this growth and to participate in the evolving market structure. So I'm confident that in the coming months and years, we'll see some good outcomes from these groups, and we will be reporting on it incrementally as we go forward. Simultaneously, service practices that are mature and at scale within our larger industry solution groups, such as banking or retail, or BPS, EIS in manufacturing, ENSOL, etc., have been carved up and merged into the industry solution structures, enabling them to offer a more integrated solution stack for their customers. All these changes, while enhancing our focus and delivery capability significantly, do not affect our customer-facing organization. You might have noticed that this quarter we have not provided revenue breakup by service practices. That is because the process of carving out revenues from the service practices into the verticals and vice versa is still underway. As you appreciate, accurately tagging and reviewing tens of thousands of ongoing projects and engagements globally is not a trivial task. Once the process is complete and the newly created units fully stabilize, we will start reporting our revenue breakup by service practices. For now, suffice it to say that all new service lines are seeing good market traction. The newly formed cognitive business operation grew over 5% in Q1, and all service lines have a robust pipeline to support secular growth. There is another change that we have made in how we report our revenue breakup by the industry verticals. This change in vertical reporting primarily is driven by the fact that our business comes from major markets like the Americas, UK, Europe and Australia, and revenue growth there tends to be fairly steady and stable. But in our portfolio, there are smaller parts which tend to be more volatile on account of their project-centric nature. When those volatile components are fitted into our verticalized reporting framework, the resulting numbers often distort market perceptions about what is really happening in the affected vertical segments. To reduce such distortion and provide you a clearer picture of our performance in our industry verticals in our major markets, we have extracted out the volatile elements, such as some of our emerging markets and products business, into a separate line called the regional market and others in growth by domain slide of our quarterly fact sheet. These groups together constitute about 17% of our consolidated revenues. It may also clarify that the segmentation is purely to assist in a more accurate discussion of our growth numbers. The definition, the business segment definition in our financial statements remains unchanged. And for those of you who want a verticalized breakup of our 100% of our revenue stack, you can find it along with their respective profit contributions in the segment information section of the statement of accounts. I will now get to discuss our segmental performance. As in the past, all growth figures I mentioned are in constant currency and they represent Q-on-Q sequential growth. The banking, financial services and insurance industry, which was flattish last quarter, has bounced back with a decent 2.3% growth, giving a relatively promising start to the year. While this is definitely better sequential growth compared to the same time last year, we would like to see more large deals into the BFS pipeline before we can take a more secular view on the nature of the demand in BFS. We had a couple of large wins in insurance this quarter and are hopefully on the verge of concluding some more in the next two quarters. This should result in a stronger performance in the second half of the year if these deals materialize. The retail and CPG sector, whose growth decelerated very sharply last year, also had a reasonably good start to the year with 2% growth, driven mostly by digital demand. The segment still requires close watching because some of our large retail clients are still going through a restructuring which could result in volatility. We have been saying for a while that the deceleration in growth is cyclical, dragged down by weakness in BFSI and retail, and that is especially evident in our Q1 numbers. If you exclude BFSI and retail and CPG as a vertical, all other verticals grew more than 3.5% in our major markets. Energy resources and utilities grew at 7.6%, travel, transportation and hospitality grew at 7%, and the life sciences and healthcare business grew at 4.7% sequentially Q on Q. Other verticals like communication, media, manufacturing, high-tech have also performed quite well. In addition to good revenue performance, we have had strong deal wins across the board, so the momentum we hope should sustain in going forward. Of the 11 key wins in Q1, we had two each in manufacturing, high-tech, and ERU, and one in life sciences, and with another four in the BFSI sector. Coming to digital, revenues from digital engagements made up now 18.9% of our overall revenues this quarter, a growth of 26% year-on-year. We are seeing quite high client interest in Internet of Things with more than 20 engagements in the areas of connected home, mobility, energy management, and remote monitoring. Our early investment in IP building in this area is now giving us significant traction. Case in point, a European global engineering company chose us in Q1 to develop an IoT platform for predictive maintenance and remote monitoring of machinery across geographies. Even more encouragingly, these deals are now coalescing into fairly large-sized opportunities and multi-year engagements. Similarly, TCS was selected as a strategic partner by a North American manufacturing firm to build an industry 4.0 IoT-driven big data analytics platform to deliver insights and predictive analytics for their end customers. Similarly, our digital interactive group also had a good quarter with multi-million dollar wins in energy and insurance verticals. And our cybersecurity business has been experiencing double-digit Q&Q growth on a very small base, but driven by compliance requirements such as GDPR, privileged access management, and cyber defense. Our investments in digital, our scale, capabilities, and the high quality of engagements have resulted in a good set of recognition from customers and industry analysts. We were ranked as a leader in 12 of the 14 digital-related assessments that we participated in, including one for overall digital transformation capability. In addition, we were ranked leaders in three assessments in intelligent automation, two each in analytics, IoT, and assurance, and one in cloud ERP implementation and cybersecurity. Coming now from a geography perspective, growth was led by a strong 5.9% Q&Q growth in continental Europe and 2.8% growth in the Latin Americas. US and UK had a relatively soft start for the year. In terms of key deals signed this quarter, North America accounted for 7 of the 11 wins, and we had 2 wins in Europe with 1 each in APAC and UK. From client metrics perspective, we track this quite closely because customer centricity is at the core tenet of our strategy, and an organization is essentially tuned to as an account-centric organization. Much of our investment goes into building new capabilities that allows us to continuously expand our participation in the customer spend and increase our wallet share. This results in a set of metrics where you see customers continuously moving up the revenue bands. The progression can sometimes be distorted by currency. However, what we report is the trailing four quarters USD revenues. Similarly, corporate divestitures can result in larger clients slipping down the revenue buckets, even as the divested entity might show up as a new client in the lower buckets. That said, during the quarter, we have added one incremental client in the 100 million plus revenue band, and even more encouragingly, 12 clients in the 10 million plus revenue band, and 5 in the 5 million plus band. So overall, I'm quite happy with the way the client portfolio is filling out, and the base of the pyramid is nicely expanding as we participate more and more in the evolving landscape. Products and platforms, all our products and platforms continue to fare well in this market. TCS Banks marked its 10th anniversary by launching two exciting new digital offerings. Quartz, a set of distributed ledger-based solutions, I'm sure NGS will talk about it in more detail. And even more interestingly, we launched an app development kit, or an ADK, that empowers banks' business teams to very quickly design and build apps of their own using modern principles of responsive web design without requiring any mobile development skills. In addition, in US, we are happy to announce that Zions Bank, our very first customer in the United States for TCS Bank's core banking software, went live this quarter. Ignio continues to grow well with 7 wins in Q1, bringing the total number of clients to 32. We celebrated its second birthday by launching Ignio for SAP, a new solution that removes complexity from SAP basis management and resolves common errors affecting critical business processes and audits all transactions for potential fraud across 150 compliance functions. During the quarter, Mastercraft, our digital platform to automate and manage IT processes, had 5 wins. We also had 1 win for Optimera, our digital retail merchandising suite, and TAP, our accounts payable platform. Coming now to the people metric side of it, we added 11,200 employees on a gross basis, which included 3,254 employees outside India, and closed the quarter with a headcount of 385,809 employees. Attrition in IT services went up slightly to 11.6 on a sequential basis, but this is typical due to the seasonality, with this time being the time of the year when many youngsters leave for higher studies. Compared to a last year basis, it is lower, with Q1 last year having 12.5% attrition. Another reason our net additions was pulled down is that we had fewer freshers onboarded in Q1 18 compared to the same period last year. But this is more of a timing issue. A much larger number of freshers are scheduled to be onboarded in Q2 and subsequent quarters. In conclusion, we had a promising start to the fiscal year with robust growth across most of our industry verticals and improved performance in BFSI and retail. We had a strong deal signings this quarter, with more to come in the next couple of months, hopefully. That should result in improved momentum in the rest of the year. Demand for our services, particularly in digital, is very strong and driving price stability. Our service practice reorganization is settling down well and should emerge as a game changer in the coming years. Over to you, Ramkin.
Yeah, thank you, Rajesh. Let me walk through the headline numbers. In the first quarter of FY 2018, our revenues grew 2% Q-on-Q on a constant currency basis, driven by a robust volume growth of 3.5%. The very sharp cross-currency movements resulted in a top-line impact of minus 2.2% in INR terms and a 1.1 positive benefit in USD terms. Reported revenue in INR was rupees 295.84 billion, which is a flattish sequential growth and Y-on-Y growth of 1%. In USD terms, revenue was $4.591 billion, which is a Q-on-Q growth of 3.1% and a Y-on-Y growth of 5.2%. Constant currency realization movement during the quarter was minus 1.5%. Moving on to the operating margin, we had two main headwinds in Q1. One was the usual seasonal impact from the wage increases that went into effect from April 1st. This time around, the impact was minus 1.5%. In addition, the sharp appreciation of the rupee against the USD and to a lesser extent against other currencies resulted in a margin impact of minus 0.8%. Together, this resulted in an operating margin of 23.4%, a Q-on-Q decline of 2.3%. Net income margin in the first quarter declined 2.2% Q-on-Q to 20.1%. An effective tax rate for the quarter was 24%. Our accounts receivable was at 72 DSO in dollar terms, down one day Q-on-Q. Net cash flow from operations was rupees 61.7 billion, which is 20.9% of the revenue and 103.8% of net income. Free cash flow was rupees 55.8 billion. After returning rupees 160 billion through the buyback process and another rupees 60.7 billion as FY17's final dividend during the quarter, invested funds as of June 30th stood at rupees 322.7 billion. The board has recommended an interim dividend of rupees 7 per share. With that, we can open the line for questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may enter star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Divya Nagarajan from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Rajesh, two questions for you. Your digital business has been roughly adding about 1% of revenue exposure per quarter. What can we expect in terms of future trends here? Is this the kind of addition that we should look at, about a 4% revenue exposure addition per year, or are there any plans to fast track this so that the legacy track starts to diminish as we go forward?
Thanks, Divya. As you said, we have restructured our service practice organization, and we will relook at how we categorize these revenues. But the intent of the whole service practice reorganization really is to give increased focus into the sub-segments within the digital stack. So we have we are committing a lot of management bandwidth into each of the individual ones as we see the opportunity for accelerating growth in that area. You will see in a few quarters our reporting metric also being more granular along those lines, and that should give a better idea about how this growth is panning out.
Got it. My second question is on the realizations. You spoke about a constant currency, a volume growth of about 3.5%, and there seems to be almost a 1.5% gap between the constant currency revenue and the volume growth. Could you just run us through what led to this gap this quarter? And it seems to have widened. Are we looking at more pricing pressure, even with digital kind of picking up? How should we read this?
I wouldn't. I think, as we said, we report realization and not actual pricing. And if you look at it over a period of time, typically it is not unusual to see some quarters with wider swings. But for the full year, our realization last year compared to the year before that has been almost flat with very marginal, in fact, a positive number. And over the last 4 or 5 years, while this question has come every time there has been volatility on a Q-on-Q basis, we have always maintained that we see a fairly stable pricing regime adjusted for the nuances of newer service lines obviously coming at a better price point. So that theme has played out over the last 3-4 years, and being that this quarter is significantly any different from that.
Thanks. I obviously have questions on your margins, but I'll come back later in the queue. Thank you very much and have a good year.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankur Rudra from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. The first question is on the BFS and retail side. Your year-over-year growth in both these verticals now appears to be somewhat softer than one of your largest peers, which has a very high digital proportion, and one of your smaller peers. And I remember in the televised commentary, I think NGS made some comments that TCS is probably not addressing some of the demand because of business structure issue, making a 3 to 5 year case versus a 7 year case. I'm just wondering, is this more than that? Is there a go-to-market issue here? And on an overall basis, what should give investors comfort that TCS is not losing share?
I don't know exactly which is the larger one and which is the smaller one you refer to, but in the scheme of things, compared to a larger one, we have managed to take away 25% market share over the last 5 years. So on a Q-on-Q basis, I wouldn't think it's a big change. We continue to have a leadership status in the BFSI segment, and we are nicely broad-basing our BFSI customer base, going even further down the stack of both smaller size institutions as well as emerging businesses in this industry, which are driven more from a technology stack basis. So we are quite confident and positive about our participation across. and some of the ones that like NGS or rather we mentioned about it. I think here also I spoke in my opening comments. Our core banking platform has gone live in US. One of the deals that we mentioned about is platform-based deal in the UK. We have good wins in the Australian market. So we are seeing very broad-based participation, both in existing customers as well as customers. So I am quite positive about our presence in this segment. And just do you want to add anything?
That's fine.
Thank you.
Sure, that's helpful. And I think, you know, the other question I had is you met with a lot of clients in the last 6 months since, you know, both of you have taken over. I'm just wondering, you know, why is the visibility still relatively soft or relatively, let's say, unclear for over 50% of the business? Is this because the demand is not there? I'm just trying to pass through your comments to understand whether this is a market-wide problem or specific to you.
Our commentary is more a reflection of that we don't see a secular trend to call. So it is not an industry-wide uptick nor an industry-wide slowdown. If you take the sectors, let's say BFSI and retail, in BFSI, even among large customers in BFSI, we have a set of customers that are growing very strongly and we have a set of customers that are constrained and challenged. If you take retail, in fact, I was sharing earlier that some of the most exciting work that we're doing in digital is actually coming out of the retail sector. And we see customers who are investing significantly because they see technology as the only way that they can react to the market environment around them. Having said that, some of them are, in fact, fairly stressed. And therefore, it is very difficult to say how it will pan out over the next let's say, short to medium term. So our commentary more is the reflection of the market as we see it. I don't think our participation, in fact, I would say that our participation in retail is probably where the market leaders in that. And in many geographies, we are far ahead of anybody else. And in BFSI, we are one of the largest, if not the largest. So we are quite well positioned and participating very well. It's more a reflection of the industry than
perfect. And just last question, if I may, you had you know, quite good wins in North America this time. It appears to have, you know, come back in deal wins, and some of the largest deals in insurance you commented about maybe signed this quarter. Would that mean that your you know, traditional surge that in BFSI we see in the first half may be delayed this time, and the shape of the quarterly trajectory might be a bit different this year versus usual years? Last question. Thanks.
Let me first give a couple of facts on the question and then we'll answer it more generically. The insurance win that you spoke about this time is different from the one that we had spoken about last time. We have had a platform win, not a small one, but by Diligenta standards, a fairly relatively smaller one. The Diligenta pipeline for larger deal is still strong. We hope that it should materialize during this quarter, but that one we'll have to wait and see how that comes about. The North American pipeline is especially strong on the non-BFSI side. We have had a good growth in North America. In fact, the pipeline there is very strong compared to the past few, but it is in the non-BFSI sector. So the BFSI side is much more muted in terms of size of deals or total opportunities, which is why that commentary about lack of visibility on the BFSI side.
Okay, thank you and best of luck for the rest of the year.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Viju George from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just a couple of questions on BFS and on digital. Is there a possibility that maybe with some of the large banks, maybe their spending is largely on track as per their budgets, but they may be doing this more with some of the other vendors, maybe non-traditional vendors, or maybe, you know, increasing their captive or in-house presence?
In fact, if anything that we have seen, BFSI spend with non-traditional vendors has slowed down and they are moving more towards the larger traditional ones. As the first phase of investments in some of these newer ones goes away, and we are looking at impacting the core many of the new investments. In fact, NGS talk about the fintech approach and hold.
I think, you know, overall, the angst around the fintechs appears to have diminished, and banks have come out with options of integrating more and more fintech-related services and automation products into the overall solution. And I think it's some of the caution in terms of digital spend, especially on automation, is newer and newer automation opportunities or new way of automation products are emerging. And as I mentioned in my televised call, it was, I would say it's changing by the week. And so some banks are taking advantage of this newer technology immediately. Some of them are saying that, look, is it the right product or should we put in a combination of this? So it's all playing out. And I think it should stabilize in terms of, you know, putting together a strategic bot architecture, I can call it, at every bank, which will drive consistently automation across what we call as the tech ops, DevOps, as well as business ops. I would probably say that rather than saying that, look, you know, there is a lack of spend.
Okay. Okay, do you sense a continuing shift towards captives, because that's something you've picked up in some of the large banks? Do you think that process is still on, which may be also taking some share from a third party players?
It's more a case to case thing, Biju. There are banks where definitely there is thinking about whether they should shift more into it. There are others who are actually aggressively moving in the opposite direction. And so it's, I wouldn't characterize it as a trend, but definitely we have seen people on both sides of the spectrum.
Sure, sure, Rajesh. And one last question on digital restructuring. I think you mentioned in your prepared remarks that you want to give more visibility and focus to each of your sub-segments within digital. Could you just elaborate on that, given the restructuring you've done? And is this focus more on the delivery execution side, or is it also in go-to-market?
Oh, it's both on the delivery as well as on the go-to-market side. So we are, I would characterize the approach as similar to what we were doing early on in the e-business side. As different technologies and different product groups are gaining scale, we are creating more focused services around that. And on the delivery organization side, we have, as I said, integrated our operations across PPS and infrastructure into our cognitive business operations practice, which is both a delivery as well as a go-to-market change. So we are doing on both sides. We are doing it from a delivery perspective of the integration of the mature service lines into the industry solution unit. Is actually a primarily a delivery-related integration. So it's across the board. We have both market-facing as well as delivery optimization.
Sure. Thank you, Rajesh. Thank you, NGS. All the best for FI18.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ananta Narayanan from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Good evening, everyone, and thank you. So my first question, Rajesh, was, you know, this new segmentation that you reported, you know, excluding the regional markets and others, which, by the way, is quite insightful, so thanks for that. So my question was on that regional markets and others piece. Now, is this something which, is there something that the company can do to address the volatility in this piece, or is this going to be a structural issue for the foreseeable future? The reason I ask it is, you know, it's almost about 1/5 of the total revenue. This piece can actually swing growth quite significantly.
Ananta, our focus, of course, is to get to annuity-based revenues in most of the markets that we operate in. Some of the markets are further along. Let me put it this way. If I take a market like Japan, while we currently don't have significant presence, it's definitely a market in which as we grow in scale, it will become much more annuity-based and much more predictable and long-term. Markets like India are unlikely in the near future to swing to that. Middle East is kind of a mixed one. We are trying to get to, especially in some of the banking relationships, to move towards more and more on the annuity side. We have some early success in some banks and some telecom companies, but the focus is to gain market share and to maintain it by participating in where the demand comes and to stay focused on profitable revenue streams. So it is, the intent is to participate and the intent is to move it systematically towards that. But if you take something like Diligenta, while, as I've said this before also, while the revenue profile is very atypical to our normal business, in toto, it's a very attractive business to be in. So when you think about that business over its full cycle of that revenue stream and combine it with our product and delivery capability, it's a very attractive business to be in. So we don't want to, you know, shy away from participating in that just because it inserts Q-on-Q volatility, and I have to stand and explain why that volatility is there. So I think this gives us a framework for a much more, what should I say, transparent and involved discussion, where we will continue to participate in markets that we think either have future potential or a good value creation, irrespective of what their revenue profile looks like.
Thanks, Harish. And my final question was, you know, on the medium-term margin front. So, you know, so when you look at this 26 to 28%, if you want to sustain this 26 to 28% band, excluding currency movements, and you know, given that there has to be constant investments made in the business, then you have your annual wage increases, etc. Do you have, you know, can you give some sort of indication on what sort of revenue growth will be required to sustain that margin band?
Ananda, we don't have a scientific answer to that. In the past, we have always felt that, you know, somewhere in the close to the mid-teens would definitely be a comfortable one, but we are tweaking our model to make sure that it can be sustained at a much lower revenue growth level. But the answer to that is we don't have a direct listing. Some extent it will play out on how fast and how extensive the digital churn is. Also, it will this thing that how the digital services coalesce into larger groups into which greater profitability can be driven. So there are many moving pieces out there. But I think the way to put it is that among all market participants, I think we are best positioned to drive profitability in that. And we are continuing to participate and simultaneously looking for opportunities to improve profitability.
Thanks, Rajesh, and good luck for the rest of the year.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sandeep Agarwal from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So I have a couple of questions from Rajesh. Rajesh, we appreciate the extra effort you have taken to, you know, break down the revenues and giving us also the piece which has been impacting the revenue growth quarter on quarter, either positively or negatively in terms of regional market. But just wanted to understand two things. One, in one or two quarters, what is the timeline by when we will be able to get the breakup of the new verticals, as you mentioned, means that detail is not there yet. And secondly, within those pieces, will there be a piece which will be equally volatile in terms of the way we are seeing in the regional market? What I am trying to understand is there also a piece which is probably equally volatile like the regional market, so that, you know, the prediction of revenue becomes much more difficult? Do you foresee that kind of scenario? And also, the second question is on the digital side. On the digital side, we heard you on the televised interview that you said that digital deals are increasing year over year in size. But do you see that deals reaching a level where, you know, the smaller vendors who have been introduced earlier to, you know, test from client perspective, they will be now moving out because the sizes are becoming that big, or you think that transition is still some time away?
Sandeep, first of all, I fully appreciate the challenge that you guys have because of our lack of sharing the service practice breakup numbers, and we are committed to do that early when we are confident about it and we can actually have a commentary that is stable and can give you appropriate color and visibility to it. At this stage, I don't know when that will be, but we are committed to that path of sharing it once it stabilizes. I think from an internal focus perspective, it's more important that the new leaders and the new services, they get to a stable base, they do the transition properly, rather than get work on an artificial timeline of having to clean it up from a reporting perspective. So we're trying to balance the need for external transparency with the need with organizational imperatives, and we'll come back to you as early as possible. The question about will some lines in that be more or less volatile, in total that is 100%, and the regional market and vertical industry is 100%, so it's just a different cut on it. So the aggregate volatility of the service practice set, the aggregate volatility of the domain set is the same. Some service lines might be volatile because especially they are new and growing, but it doesn't change the the overall nature of the business. So this is not another set of revenue streams that we're going to introduce which would change the overall mix. That's the point on that. On digital businesses, anecdotally, we have seen clients come back to us from smaller vendors as deal sizes have increased. More importantly, it is actually the driver is not so much the increase in deal size. It is the fact that as they have to touch the core and as they have to get into the more enterprise-wide systems, a lot of the engineering capability that we bring to bear and the contextual knowledge that we have of the customer environment becomes a significant part of the value proposition and the differentiator. And it's a space where we are much more competitive than the early stage experimental and pilot-based projects. But how is that churn going? Difficult to call. I would say that it is unidirectional. I can't put a number as to how far ahead we are on that.
So thanks, Rajesh, for that question. But let me rephrase the question again. And what I'm trying to understand here is, like, if you see some of the Central European, East European, and South American companies, although extremely small in size, but they have been posting very good growth in above 20% and so for last several quarters. And although they are extremely small in size, so probably they don't have a legacy baggage or something, but I'm trying to understand that whether that kind of piece is existing in our structure as well, but right now because of lack of reporting, it is not showing up.
So many of the, I don't know which are the very small ones that you're talking about, but if you take some of the medium-sized or mid-tier-sized Eastern European ones, in fact, our win rates against them are significantly higher today than they were even maybe a couple of years back. So in recent times, I don't often recall anything that we have lost to any of the couple of Eastern European vendors that are in that mid-tier size. So I don't... But that's anecdotal, and I don't know about the other smaller ones. Overall, in almost every single market that we participate in, our market share is going up. So there is consolidation happening, and we're coming out positive on the consolidation side.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sandeep Shah from CIMB. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just on the BFSI growth in a constant currency, which is 2.3, is it possible to give us a growth separately for BFS and insurance?
We don't break that out.
Okay. Just Rajesh, on the BFS, you also said that the large deals are not up to the mark and you need more large deals to, say, sequential pickup in the demand. So is it more to do with the decision-making delay, especially in North America, looking at the lot of noise on the regulatory changes on the outsourcing, or do you believe that there is a pause in terms of structural shift of the spend which used to happen earlier versus now? Or is it more to do with intense competition in the market?
I did not say that, how did you characterize it, that the large deals are not sufficient. I didn't say that. What I said is that it is not a secular trend. There are customers where we have large deals and significant growth and investment, and there are customers who are more constrained and challenged. In fact, you're pursuing, you know, multi-hundred million dollar kind of deals. And if you look at the wins in this quarter, of the 11 that we have announced, four are in BFSI, two in BFS and two in insurance. So it's not that there are no large deals. The comment was more that it is not homogeneous for us to make a secular comment about the sector, and it's more diverse kind of demand environment that we see.
Okay, and is it for the North America, I think the deal wins overall is also better. So is it fair to say that on a Q-on-Q, the decision making is improving in North America, or you are still wait and watch before you call it as a trend?
Again, as I shared with you, we are seeing good pipeline and good closure in North America, but coming outside of the BFSI sector. Make a comment about is it increasing or decreasing, very difficult to say. In some industries it's doing well, and that shows up in our growth figures also. So if you look at travel or utilities or those are doing better than 7%, life sciences is doing better than 4%, so that's showing up in that side. But beyond that, I don't think we can give a generalized characterization of whether it is faster or slower.
Okay. Just on the M&A now, looking at the service reorganization and most of the M&A focus of the peers, even the larger peers, is more on the service side, more on the innovation side. So with the new service reorganization, whether the TCS openness on the M&A will increase, or we will continue to remain in terms of focusing on more adding value? I agree that is the key, but is it the frequency of M&A may go up with the new service reorganization?
First of all, it's important to remember that TCS probably has the most successful M&A track record in this industry. And we have never shied away from investments. When we find the right asset at the right price point, we move in. And a great example of it was the investment that we did in the Citibank outsourcing on at the peak of the volatility of the financial crisis, when M&A was not the flavor of the month. So we believe that disciplined approach to M&A is the path to value creation, and it's a complementary process to organic growth. So we are always on the lookout for the right opportunities at the right price points. And with the new structure also, we'll continue to remain open to opportunities, whether it is from the services perspective or verticals perspective, or from the geographical perspective, where in fact we have been very active, and I'm quite positive about the success that we have enjoyed on that, each of these dimensions.
Okay, thanks. Helpful. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sumit Jain from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Firstly, I wanted to understand on the digital projects, are you really seeing bigger sized projects in the digital area? Because as per NASSCOM, they told that most of the deals in digital are still pretty small. So can you throw some color on that?
They are larger than what they were earlier. And some very large deals are also materializing. One of the deals that you're pursuing with the engineering major in UK is actually primarily an IoT and analytics driven deal, which is in the range of 50 million plus. So it is large deals are coming, but and definitely all deals are probably larger than what they were earlier. But it is a market which does have a lot of small deals.
And also, can you comment, generally, is the pricing far better in the digital projects than the legacy ones? And also, what is the ultimate margins we have right now? And how do you believe it going forward?
Digital price points are definitely better than legacy price points. And this is in the nature of this business. Any new technology commands a price premium. And any scaled technology comes at a decreasing price point. In fact, that is a key driver which enables technology adoption to keep on increasing at a client level. And this is not just for services. Any technology that you take, that is the reason why technology is so successful overall, is because it actually has a reducing per unit price point. So I would say that in the larger scheme of things, we are riding that curve with a new set of technologies today. And 10 years from now, there will be some other new set of technologies and we'll have to write that also. What is important is, can we acquire these skill sets? Can we reskill our workforce? Can we participate in those opportunities? And to put it in a concise way, can we stay relevant to our customers? And I think that client profile that we have shared and the metrics that we share is the final validation that our relevance to our customers continues to increase and our ability to mine these customers is the best check of our health.
Right, Rajesh. So can you also comment on the profitability margin, because it seems that initially you have to invest a lot in the proof of concepts and the go-to-market team. So can you comment on the margin profitability as well, apart from pricing, what you said?
Again, I mean, our business margin is directly linked to scale. Any given service that as it increases in scale, margin profile improves. While it is smaller scale, all the elements that you spoke about is true. Greater investment, greater, as a percentage of revenue, much more SG&A expenses. But as it scales up, it becomes much more profitable. The pyramid improves, the leverage improves in all forms. Lesser touch point, greater delivery certainty. Everything adds to the margin benefit for scaled services.
Right. Okay, I think that's all from my end and all the best for the remainder of the year. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Jain from MK Global. Please go ahead.
So we saw this 1.5% impact because of the realization. If you see the CC and volume spread of 3.5 and 2% growth, so if you can divide this decline in realization in terms of either the mix or discount or shift, how this would have panned out?
Rahul, I don't, I mean, on a quarterly basis, I don't want to get into it. Actually, I had commented earlier that if you look at our full-year-to-full-year realization and these numbers here, for the last 4 years, it has been -0.2%, -0.1%, 0.0%, 0.8% positive. So I don't think, in a given quarter, it is appropriate to try and take it up. But we wouldn't be able to share that.
Okay, but even in cases, so this is the net which we have gained, but if we have to call for the trend, even on the legacy side, as you said in the previous case, that as the technology matures, the pricing keep on reducing. So what is that number for us on and the corresponding portfolio to that would be what size?
Can't share.
Okay, thanks. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Chopra from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Rajesh just had one question on the margins. So the cumulative impact from currency in the last couple of quarters would be around 120 basis points. So excluding which, you would be at 24.6%. So which seems to be the farthest you've been probably from your aspired range of 26 to 28. So just wanted to know, what would we attribute this to? And secondly, would you believe that digital at 20% of revenues is at the scale at which it can still command a very healthy margin, or it really there's a long way to go there?
There's nothing specific one off to attribute it to. Somebody had asked earlier about the linkage to what is the growth rate that is required to sustain it. Part of it is a reflection of the growth that growth profile that has panned out over the last few quarters. Part of it is this whole issue, whole area of digital, where that has been an area that we are investing in and trying to churn in. And while we are clubbing multiple things together and reporting digital as one, which is in line with the industry practice, but in actual service services, if you think about it, there are very, very diverse businesses underneath that, whether you think about cloud or automation or digital interactive or IoT. These are all fairly granular services, and it is more a mathematical figure to put it as 20% and classify it as one segment. So scale depends on a given service line scaling up. And as those scale up, I'm sure they will lend themselves to a much better profitability.
Understood. So would it be fair to assume that the scale in digital would be one of the biggest drivers of bringing your margins back to the band that you think you can operate at?
All of it, scale in digital and overall growth rates and of course the volatility in the operating environment and productivity.
Got it. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Menon from Elara Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Quick question, Namjee. Heard from industry sources that U.S. The environment for hiring is pretty tight, and salaries have really shot up over the last year or so. So do you see any constraints in hiring limiting your revenue growth, or do you see that impacting your costs in any way?
So we do not see any constraint as far as hiring is concerned in U.S.
Having said that, the U.S. Unemployment rate is at a historical low, and obviously, it's as we have always maintained, it's a supply-constrained market with its own and a fairly, what should we say, price-elastic market. Not price-elastic, a fairly efficient pricing market. So net-net, it will play out in its own ways.
And secondly, in your conference, I think you had mentioned that diligent is a more volatile business, and that's included within your regional markets and others. Is that correct? And if so, you know, a little surprised by this, because I was under the impression that diligent is a platform-based BPO business with long-term contracts.
In fact, the line item there has not just volatile businesses, but better characterization would be non-standard revenue profile businesses. So Diligenta, as you rightly said, is a platform-based business, but if you look at its revenue profile over a contract term, it is a very skewed revenue profile with a fairly high front-end loading and a declining loading into its tail and a long tail. So a very, very different revenue profile and a revenue characteristic compared to our typical services business. So what we are clubbing there is businesses with non-services kind of revenue profiles, and using volatile as a more generic term to describe it.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate the clarification. And best luck.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing remarks. Over to you.
Thank you, operator. To sum up the call, we had a promising start to the fiscal year with a strong volume growth of 3.5%. Other than BFSI and retail, there was robust growth across most of our industry verticals, with every one of them growing upwards of 3.5% in the quarter. BFSI and retail and CPG, which have been weak for the last quarter, also showed some improvements in Q1. We see our service practice reorganization as a significant change in our operating model, and expect to see good scale build-up in the newer service practices under the leadership of some of our most successful business leaders. our digital business continues to grow very strongly with significant market traction and deal wins in every element of the digital service stack. Our products and platforms are also doing exceedingly well with good wins in Q1 and a strong pipeline. And as I said, the client metrics continue to be strong and pricing remains stable from a longer term perspective. We have strong deal wins in Q1 and expect to close some larger deals in the current quarter, which gives us confidence for the rest of the year. On that note, I'd like to conclude today's call and thank you all for joining in.
Thank you very much, members of management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of TCS, that concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.